This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Solutions Developers Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency might be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today I'm here with Dave Winogrand, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Information Management and Technology, Deputy Chief Information Officer at the Department of Defense. Boy, your business card, I don't know how you get all these titles. It's incredible, isn't it?
Sure.
And I just, on the back of his card, it says, Dave is tall, tan, and terrific. So I guess that's what we should refer you as from now on, huh?
Yeah, that's the highlight of the morning for me. Thank you, John.
Of the morning. Well, I was at a presentation last week that Dave gave, and I was taking notes, and I was kind of amazed at how he hits all the mountaintops that many federal agencies are thinking about. And I thought we'd bring him in today, and maybe he can share some of his knowledge, some of the brain cells with my listeners. And we're going to spend the next half hour just go over some topics I think they're going to apply to military folks, non-military folks, federal agencies, and probably the people in Bethesda and a law firm who are listening, because I don't think many of these concepts vary from the federal agencies to commercial organizations. But before we dive in here, I was doing some research on Dave this morning, and I started running down these awards he's won, and I ran out of ink. So I figured maybe what awards haven't you won? Maybe in two or three, but he's an award-winning professional. And give us a background of how you wound up in your position, Dave.
Sure thing, John. You know what they say, if you hang around long enough, you're bound to get some attention eventually. So, I didn't have a typical IT kind of career. I've worked for the Navy for my entire adult life as a civil servant, and I had a number of jobs that I would describe as change kind of jobs. I did outsourcing, I did the base closures in the 90s, I restructured the Naval Shore Establishment, jobs in logistics and financial management and stuff like that. And then about the turn of the millennium, if you will, I went to work as the deputy CIO for the Navy, and my first project there was Y2K. So I'm a hopeless optimist. So I kind of view these as a series of jobs that were all about leading change. You could say those were a bunch of pessimistic things that happened there, but don't tell me if that's really the way you feel, because, like I said, I think it helps build to where we are today, right? So then I was the Navy CIO for a few years, and then about almost 4 years ago, I got the call from John Grimes, then the Assistant Secretary of Defense, who asked me to come over and look after the CIO portfolio at DOD. And it really is still a lot about cultural change. So people that have had a lot of change management skills, I think, are positioned well to be information leaders today. I also serve as the Vice Chair of the Federal CIO Council. So as I've gone through this information management career, I'm gradually getting into bigger and bigger ponds where I can stir things up. So not only just within the Navy, Marine Corps, now across DOD, and now helping to stir things up across the entire federal government.
Well, change management is always interesting, especially when you're a young fellow like me. I mean, I haven't seen as many things as you have, Dave. I mean, I just got out of high school a couple years back. But when you look at what this new generation is all about, I mean, if you look at the federal government, baby boomers like me are about to, head to Florida, and there's this new generation coming in. And I think the whole idea of adapting the infrastructure for them, adapting IT for them, can be top of mind for any successful CIO.
Absolutely. It is a crucial point. And if you want to learn more, if you go to the Federal CIO Council website, you can find a new document that we produced called the Next Generation Workforce Guide. We think there are these two compelling issues that are happening. This dramatic change in the tools and technologies we use to live our lives and to do our jobs, coupled with, as you point out, people my age are getting ready to retire, and the baby boomers are leaving. The Generation X is a smaller population base, and then this next generation, Generation Y, the millennials, or as we like to refer to them, the net generation, which reflects some of the research work that Don Tapscott and others have done, you know, they're going to take leadership positions at a much younger age. And so it's a call to action for all of us about how you will attract and retain the workforce of the future, the best and the brightest, and then give them the environment that'll unleash their creativity and innovation. I think you have to do two things right. You have to make sure that you're going to have the right kind of technologies, because they're a generation that wants to be able to use iPads and droids, and they want to be able to do social networking and use those kinds of tools to connect themselves. And so you got to make sure you have the right kind of technology environment for them, but you also have to think differently about how you will lead them and develop them. The good news is they have a strong desire to do public service. The bad news, potentially, if you're not willing to get with the game here, is that, you know, they're not like my generation or my parents' generation, where we might have gone to work for a company and stayed there 40 years and then gotten the gold watch, right? They want to be someplace where they can make a difference. So change is the nature of supervisory relationships, from, you know, once a year performance appraisals to actually doing coaching and mentoring and giving leadership opportunities. What does it mean to do professional development? So there's a whole lot of things that we can actually do to help be prepared for the workforce of the future, and that's what the Net Generation Guide helps you do. So my advice is, if you're an information leader, you ought to go check it out. And frankly, if you're not an information leader, I think that the things that it works through about the norms and the values of the Net Generation and what they're looking for and how you can give them that kind of an environment apply across the board, public, private, whatever area you work in.
Is there a URL for our listeners?
Google Federal CIO Council. It's like cioc.gov.
Got it. So we have Star Trek Next Generation. We have federal government Next Generation.
There you go.
And I think if you think of the next generation or this current generation, you know, when I started my career, electric typewriters were kind of in vogue. And now everyone just assumes social networking. They assume Google and Facebook, and they assume these services, kind of remote services, all kinds of different words. So some people call it cloud computing, remote services. Some people say it's a return to the old way of doing things. Mm-hmm. But I think I want to touch a little bit on so we have a bunch of new people coming to government, new leaders coming up, and they expect cloud services. But we have some constraints here. We have to worry about security. We have to worry about actually the value of cloud services. And I thought maybe you'd give us some of your ideas on that. I've read some articles with some fun words about cloud computing. Maybe you can give us what you think cloud computing is all about and how it's going to impact the federal IT professional.
Wow, you touched on so much right there, because I mean, you touched on all the big issues that are big for CIOs right now. How do you improve information sharing? How do you deal with security, which will be radically different in the 21st century than this sort of reactive, hunkering down mentality of the years of the past? And what happens with these new things, new waves of ideas, you know, a service-oriented approach, Web 2.0 tools, and now cloud computing? And it's one of those interesting things, because, you know, there's sort of this conundrum of when something has a lot of buzz, it often helps make an organization be able to change a little bit more easily, because, you know, when the emergence of the World Wide Web or the advent of personal computers or the proliferation of personal devices like BlackBerries, you know, everybody kind of wanted to get some. So if your change at work had to do with that kind of stuff, you could get people to go with you more willingly. On the other side of the coin, though, you know, when you get these things that have all this massive attention, they come with a lot of hype too. And so then there's this sort of antibodies that form. I think if you look past the hype, you will see that this conversation about cloud computing is going to be a profound change for all of us. If you started the most basic element of the idea, you know, if you needed to do a heavy modeling and simulation exercise for the next couple of weeks, you know, you wouldn't be well served to go out and buy a bunch of servers. So this idea about being able to get capacity on demand, be able to scale up rapidly and scale back down to take care of your needs, to buy IT more as a utility rather than buy boxes, is really important. And it's value-laden, right? I mean, it gives you speed and it helps reduce costs. It improves your environmental footprint. We often refer to people that want to own their own data centers and their own servers, you know, as server huggers. They just can't let go of them. And there's a great story about Larry Ellison at Oracle, who was trying to consolidate servers a few years back. In one of the business units, he actually had to he said he hired a retired Navy SEAL to go to the other country and unplug the servers and bring them back to help people get over the fact that you got to own it yourself.
Navy SEAL do that, huh?
Right? Which is part of the challenge. If you move to the cloud, you're going to have to move to this world where other people are going to provide stuff to you. But virtualization and capacity on demand is just the beginning. To me, one of the real prizes will be when we move our desktops to the cloud, because we spend a lot of money and have a lot of security issues associated with desktops heavily laden with software and stuff on them, and this need to be nomadic and connected from anywhere, there's a huge opportunity.
We're going to have to take a quick break here, Dave. When we get back, talk a little more about cloud computing and the federal IT professionals and some goals coming up in the next few years. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Dave Winogrand, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Information Management Technology at the DOD. He is a hopeless optimist, and we're talking about federal IT technology. I guess you got to be an optimist with all the change and coming and going, security threats and everything else. And we talked about cloud computing before the break. you know, one critique of cloud computing is that, oh, it's security issues. But I think there's security issues in not changing, too. Isn't that correct, Dave?
Absolutely. You know, we have to be careful to separate true security concerns from this sort of fear of the new thing that often happens to us that, like, may prevent us from giving the new idea a chance. It's absolutely true that, you know, you're going to have to think about whose cloud, what cloud. We're sort of at the point now where we're saying, where a lot of people will say, you know, anybody's, as long as it's my cloud and you're not in it, I'll be okay. But that's okay, because it gets people to begin to dabble about what does it mean to get a managed service? What does it mean to have capacity on demand that's provided from someplace else? But I actually think that, you know, if we get it right, the cloud offers us some real security advantages. I mean, well, number one, it gives you a bunch of access advantages to be, you know, connected from wherever you are and be able to find your data and your information. But also, you know, as we were talking about before the break, if you move your desktops to the cloud, you would not only have much better access, but, you know, we spend a lot of money. We have 3.5 million person organizations, so there are millions of computers, and it costs a lot of money to patch and do host-based security and all the other things that you do to, you know, secure a desktop. And there actually could be a model where you had secure browsers, virtualizing, and you connected from anywhere, and the information was securely stored in the cloud, and you can actually improve security as well as access.
There's a fellow named Soat, S-O-A-T, that just wrote an article on cloud computing. It's pretty entertaining. And one of the points he made was he said, you know, the cloud is there. It's elastic, but it's not unlimited. And I think some people think, oh, the cloud's the answer to everything. It's going to bring me coffee in the morning and change oil in my car. No, I mean, it has very specific limitations. And we don't want to be too trapped by the terminology and the trends, trapped by the trends. But I think that's what we have to have the listeners realize is that, yes, it's a great technology. And a ball peen hammer is a great tool. But you're not going to screw in, you need a number two Phillips screwdriver for it. It's the right tool at the right time. And I think that's what the listeners should understand is that, you know, it is elastic, but not unlimited.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, and I think if you think in the bigger context, in fact, oftentimes I try not to actually use words like clouds with the internal audience just so you can get past that, you know, well, that's a hype I can outlast. But if you look at these three trends that have happened together, this movement to a service-oriented world, so service-oriented architectures and the powers that they bring to move away from building big, giant, complex IT systems that take years to deploy and never delight anyone, to a world where you could quickly deploy services and have them reused, right? I mean, there's a speed and agility and innovation that happens there that was unlike what was going on before. And you couple that with this Web 2.0 phenomenon where people are using these web tools, social networking services, blogs, wikis, the ability to mash things up, again, to do better collaboration and do it faster. And then you couple it with the idea behind a cloud, which is I ought to be able to get my information anywhere, have access to it, have it be reasonably priced, not be heavily tied to infrastructure and stuff. If you bring those three things together, two important things happen. Number one, you know, in terms of business results, you're going to deliver new information capabilities much more rapidly. But you're also going to help with the sort of hearts and minds of the team. Because, you know, there is no doubt that it is hard for people to step out of the comfort zone of how they do work now. And so sometimes if you can ride the waves of change, you know, if people want some of that, people want an iPad or an iPhone or a Droid, right? And so if you can somehow invoke wireless technologies in your solution, they'll be more likely to take a step with you into the new unknown if it's to help get to a place that they'd like to go themselves.
A step into the new unknown. Sounds like a recruiting message for for the U.S. military. I think, you know, I'll be quite honest. You know, I deal with a lot of software developers, and I've got boots on the ground in a lot of different organizations. And I think some people may look at this and go, geez, I don't know, this new stuff maybe put me out of a job here, you know? I mean, why should we automatically patch our systems? Hey, that's what I get paid to do, you know? It's almost like feather bedding.
Yeah,
there's a term from many years ago, but the unions use that. But I think that might be a fear.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's hard. It's like the my cheese got moved thing, right? I mean, so the world is changing. And you know, so if you wake up and recognize that you'll be ahead of the curve and you'll have great business opportunities. But if you're sort of stuck in the business models of the past, then you won't be. And I'll just give you two quick examples. You know, less and less will you see the future be about building big, standalone, complex IT systems for huge organizations. They take a long time. They you know, leaders change. And so you keep having this thing about trying to keep momentum to them. Technology changes. And so this power of web services, the ability to use managed services and other providers to help you to get stuff done, I mean, it's going to change. And you're going to move from a world of the one big bite that takes many years to deliver to a whole bunch of increments that get delivered over the period of months. So that's a fundamental shift. And if you're not getting that, then you probably will get left behind. The other fundamental shift is the change in security. And so their practices of the past is sort of about, you know, well, if I just lock myself away and I block access to websites and I hunker down between firewalls, I'll be secure, is completely 180 degrees out from this world of sharing, collaborating beyond your boundaries and the power that brings to you. So companies that get it and move to like offering security solutions that allow you to share more rather than share less, right? Secure browsers, virtualization, stateless computing, all these kinds of things are really huge opportunities if we can get past the, you know, sort of security mindset of the future and think about secure information sharing for the future.
You know, in terms of vulnerabilities, I expect that many of the military folks have studied military history, and many governments, many countries prepare for the previous war.
Absolutely.
And not for the last war. So if I'm sitting here worrying about antivirus and not worrying about, you know, drive-by downloads, I'm going to get such tunnel vision. I'll be real good with the antivirus signatures from 5 years ago. And then guess what? Then I get hit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so there's no doubt that if you're not doing the basic blocking and tackling, then you're really behind, right? So all this stuff like, you know, using, if you're a government agency, using your HSP 12 card for secure access and doing data rest encryption of mobile devices and using secure configurations of operating systems and reducing your internet access points, all those kinds of things are just sort of like the initial ante to get in the game. If you're not doing that stuff, then heaven help you. But that's not enough. And if you keep thinking about security in the old ways, then you will say that we'll block access to, you know, to this website because something might happen. But, you know, the fact of the matter is you can't have a strategy that's about blocking access to websites. It's a hopelessly failed and reactive strategy. So what you got to do instead is, how can I put tools into place that advance the cause of security while they allow people to share with other organizations, non-government entities, et cetera?
We're going to have to take a quick break when we get back. There's a movie that talks about Show Me the Money, and you have a background in finance. And I think that you can probably spend about a half hour and get out a piece of paper and show the listeners the money on why many of these changes are the best, you know, from a fiduciary perspective. It's being responsible with assistance money in many ways, too. So there's social reasons for making these changes, and there's intellectual reasons and probably technical reasons. But whoa, who's writing the checks here? Now, if you can show me in a piece of paper, in the business world, they're going to say, okay, Dave, you're a great guy, but here, show me how I can save money on this. And after the break, we'll talk about Show Me the Money with Dave.
All right.
You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, we are speaking with Dave Wenegren, who is the Deputy Assistant Director of Defense for Information Management Technology, Deputy Chief Information Officer at the Department of Defense. We're talking about everything here. We're talking about social networking and cloud computing and the next generation for the federal government. And I thought we'd touch on this whole concept of social networking and find out how. I mean, social networking with a bunch of Marines doesn't really fit. You know, I figure Marines are going to get in fist fights, but social networking, it just doesn't fit with the U.S. military, does it?
You'd be surprised. I mean, you know, we have embraced this concept. I mean, the beauty of the Web 2.0 world is the power of mass collaboration to allow you to reach out beyond the boundaries of your organization and get better knowledge and make better decisions. So we are actually huge users of these social networking capabilities. It would be enough if it was just about, you know, deployed service members being able to keep touch with their family. But we do so much more than that kind of quality of life stuff. I mean, we use these social networking tools for collaboration with non-government entities. I mean, you need to look no farther than Haiti to see how tools like Twitter and Facebook and things like that were used to help save lives. And you know, our combatant commanders use social networking tools. And so part of the issue is getting away, again, from the sort of fear of the new thing and sort of look at it as there's a continuum. And at one end of the spectrum, you may have like, you know, highly classified intelligence analysts who have developed a collaboration tool called A-Space, which is completely within the boundary of their network because that's not the kind of thing you'd want to collaborate on in public. But at the other end of the spectrum, using tools like Facebook and MySpace, I mean, there are a lot of really important reasons why you would use those tools to be able to collaborate with people beyond the boundaries of your organization.
You know, I had some military folks on the air, and they talked about IEDs and how to solve problems with IEDs. All of a sudden, you have this instant communication, and you can save someone's life. So, I mean, if you can use a tool that is as soft as social networking to save somebody's life in Afghanistan, well, guess what? I'm all about it, and I think the listeners are too. Mm-hmm. When we talk about this ease of use and collaborating quickly, there's always a financial component to it. And I mentioned before the break that you do have a background in finance, and I think you can get out a piece of paper and you can do this show me the money pretty easily with a lot of these technologies, can't you?
I think so. I think it's a compelling business case. If you look at the shifts that are happening, there's this democratization of technology that what used to take computer programmers weeks on their own and a raise raised floor room to like develop code, now gets done by a young Navy lieutenant or Air Force major overnight. We mash things up, we post it, we do it, you know, we use tools like DoD has forge.mil as an application space, and you can post it, other people can build it and use it and reuse it. So you have this amazing ability to deliver capabilities overnight, and you couple that with this idea about we're moving to a market-driven enterprise. That, you know, if you all put all your eggs in a big giant IT basket, you know, one big system, then you got to stay the course and you can't have any innovation and flexibility perhaps. But if you have people developing quickly built apps and widgets and things that happen really fast, you have the opportunity to let the market, let your customers help decide which ones are working best. They're very small investments, so it's okay that some of them gain great popularity. Think of like the, you know, the iPhone App Store or the Droid App Store, right? That people collaborate and they help make them better. And so if you look at this idea about, you don't have to buy more than you need. You could develop applications really quickly. You deliver information capabilities more rapidly. You take advantage of things like the cloud, so you're not paying for infrastructure you don't need. You're going to delight your customers because you're going to get capabilities more rapidly, but you're also going to significantly drive down costs.
You know, my wife tells me that of every 10 ideas I have, 9 are bad. And there's no doubt about that.
But you're lucky you got one.
But I get that one idea. And you know, if there's an officer sitting in a cube somewhere trying to come up with a solution, well, maybe there's 10 officers and maybe there's 9 bad ideas. But guess what? There's that one idea that may save a life or maybe change things all around. It's the incredible ability of opening your mind up to the past and to the future. Just got a couple minutes here, and we have a certified crystal ball here in front of Dave, and we're going to ask him to peer into the future of the DOD and tell us everything in detail, month by month, what's going to happen in the next 5 years. I'm ready and writing it down.
So my crystal ball looks a little bit more like a magic eight ball.
Don't break it. Oh, here's the heavenly ball.
Yeah,
here's
the
magic
eight ball. Future looks
right
cloudy.
There.
You know, but,
future cloudy.
Yeah, so you know, so I'm afraid I may disappoint. But I'll tell you this. You know, we just talked about this idea about democratization of technology, market-driven enterprises, this ability to be connected anywhere that, you know, in the old days, which were only a few years ago, you went to work to have good gear, and now your better gear might be at home, you know, than the computer at your work.
I got to go home working a fast computer.
Right. And so, you know, so being able to be connected through what were formerly untrusted devices, I mean, the amount of knowledge that will be available, voice, video, data, is just going to continue to grow. The importance of being able to find value in that data is going to continue to grow. The changes are happening more quickly. The shifts are more dramatic. And so we really are on a cusp of a radically different world where people want to be connected from any kind of device, anywhere, find the people and information they need to get their job done. It's going to be a time where you're going to have to embrace speed and agility. I mean, you know, the power of a 3.5 million person organization is the knowledge that can be shared. As long as you don't let the size of an organization as big as the Department of Defense become an impediment to its speed. So finding ways to continue to drive for innovation and speed is going to be hugely important. And you know, it's a time of tremendous opportunities, but I am a hopeless optimist, but I'm also a realist. And so this is hard. This is about getting people to step out of their comfort zone. The technology will continue to advance at such a pace, and you're going to have to stay atop of it. But at the heart of the matter right now, we still are dealing with people, bringing in the right people, helping to train the people that we have, and help to create this environment where they can be adept at leading change. And it's hard work. So as information leaders, you may need therapy. But if you can't get therapy, I'll offer you a book. There's a book by Robert Quinn called Building the Bridge While We Walk on it. And it sort of helps to help you walk through how to change. Because today, you're going to have to be a leader of change yourself. There's the great book Execution by Larry Bossidy and Ram Charan. And there's the quote about, you know, leaders get the behaviors that they exhibit and tolerate. And that's where you are right now. You're going to have to lead this change.
You know, we can sit here on top of the mountaintop, look down and say, well, we have a new generation come in. We'll just change things around. It'll be easy. Well, that's an awful simple statement. That doesn't mean it's easy. I mean, it's simple, but not easy. There's a challenge there in negotiating these waters.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about helping people to step out of their comfort zones and be able to embrace a brand new future. It's a huge opportunity.
And I think you've been successful in the past, probably have a lot of success in the future. We'll have you back on the air in another 6 months and get out a new crystal ball. This one is a purple crystal ball. Maybe the next time we'll get a...
Purple, that's joint speak in DOD, so that's the right way to go.
This is the right way to go. Well, thanks for your time today, Dave. You have been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Dave Wenigren, who is the Deputy Chief Information Officer at the Department of Defense. Thanks, Dave.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Solutions Developers Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk. Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Here's Rob Carey, Chief Information Officer, Navy, on the Federal Executive Forum on Cybersecurity, sponsored by McAfee.
I think one of the big ones is the creation of the ICIMC, you know, the Information Security Identity Management Committee of the Federal CIO Council, was a great step in the direction of corralling the CISOs and CIOs to collaborate on the best practices responses that they may have.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
The rapid rise in cybersecurity threats and compliance requirements make protecting citizens' confidential information increasingly challenging. McAfee is the standard throughout federal, military, intelligence, and civilian enterprises worldwide. McAfee's capabilities are essential to keeping federal agencies ahead of the latest cyber threats. To learn more about how McAfee can help your organization combat cybersecurity threats, please call 1-888-VIRUS-NO or go to McAfee.com/government.